Welcome to On the Docket with your host, Calvin Carter. Each week at this time, Redeemer Broadcasting examines an issue or topic of interest to our listeners. Please stay tuned as we find out what's on the docket today.
Welcome again to our program, and with me today is Jean Allert. Jean founded the Samaritan Women back in 2007 and currently serves as executive director. Jean, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me back.
Jean, for folks who are unaware, what is the Samaritan Women?
We are an anti-human trafficking organization based out of Baltimore, Maryland, but with a national footprint. We started back in 2007 providing direct care to survivors of trafficking that were referred to us from all over the United States, providing long-term care, restorative care to help individuals reenter society in a healthy and productive way. We did that work for over a decade, and in doing so, have developed a model of care, have done a tremendous amount of research about the landscape of care. And in 2018, we made a pretty significant shift, realizing that we could serve more survivors and better address the gaps in care nationally if we moved to equipping others to do this work. So now we operate under a program called the Institute for Shelter Care. And that is two-pronged. One, we're addressing the gaps in services across the country by establishing new programs. And two, we're also helping to raise the quality of care through research, development of standards, accountability and partnerships, so that survivors, wherever they may be referred, will get the best possible care.
So you're helping folks around the nation who would like to take a bite out of human trafficking by allowing them not to have to reinvent the wheel, so to speak.
Absolutely. You know, back in 2007, when I was feeling the call to get into this work, what was a real impediment for me was talking myself out of it. I didn't understand the space. I didn't have any lived experience. I didn't feel qualified. And I think those impediments, what I perceived to be impediments, were false. And there, I believe, are a number of people who would mobilize and would engage in this issue if they felt that they were supported and there was a path to engagement. And we're certainly seeing that to be true. In 2019, we trained up four new agencies in four different states. And then in 2021, we'll have five agencies we'll be working with to help them establish programs. You know, Calvin, our goal is over the next 5 years that we will help to establish 24 new programs across the United States in areas of greatest need. You might find it interesting, your listeners as well, that here's some of the sort of the broad numbers. We don't know in the United States how many victims of sex trafficking there actually are. That's a very underground business. It's not often reported. Some jurisdictions don't screen for it very well. So we don't really know the numbers, but what gets thrown around is the idea of being somewhere around 300,000 children in the United States. The Polaris Project communicated 199 cases of child sex trafficking a year ago, 199,000. So that's what we might be dealing with in terms of the numbers. But when you look at the service side and really where can these individuals go or be referred to for that kind of specialized care, there's only 177 shelters in the United States, and that equates to about 1,400 beds. So the delta here is 1,400 beds, upwards of 300,000 or more, just child victims. That doesn't even account for the number of adult victims. So we have a huge gap, huge, huge gap. There are 16 states in America that have no shelter program at all. So that's the problem that we're trying to attend to, is how can we take what we've been taught, what we've learned, what we've developed, leverage that so that programs like this can replicate across the United States.
I found a definition of human trafficking online, and it says, human trafficking is a crime in which force, fraud, or coercion is used to compel a person to perform labor, services, or commercial sex. It affects all populations, adult, children, men, women, foreign nationals, U.S. citizens, and all economic classes. When this issue first took hold of you, and you decided it was time for you to do something, were you operating with any preconceived notions that you discovered were incorrect when you got deep into the subject?
Yes. Now, back in 2007, this really wasn't an issue that was on the radar for most Americans. That really shifted around 2010 when we started to have more awareness programs. So all I really understood was the concept of prostitution and didn't really understand the difference between trafficking and the compelled nature of that. You know, prostitution, while also a crime, assumes that the individual is acting with full agency, right? Completely their choice, consequence, all theirs. In exploitation, we're talking about there being another party that is using the methods of force or fraud or coercion to compel that person into that form of sexual servitude. And so I didn't understand that piece of it. The women also taught me a tremendous amount about how they got into these situations, largely through filling relational needs. You know, I think Hollywood does us a disservice for us thinking that, you know, it's either the nefarious white van that's parked at the mall that's snatching girls. That's an erroneous fear tactic. that what we see is more often the case is that victims are individuals who are more often than not, in our situation, 94% of the time, they were sexually molested in the home. We often see a situation where she's running away. So she's trying to actually escape a difficult situation. It's just she runs into an equally difficult, equally damaging situation. There are lots of predatory people who are prepared to prey on vulnerability. And a child who's run away from home is absolutely vulnerable. So I think the relational nature was something I was not at all attuned to. It didn't make sense to me why somebody would have a trauma bond or an emotional attachment. But that's because I didn't understand that in some respects, if they've fled a bad situation, they're ever hopeful that this next person is going to be safe, trustworthy, take care of them, love them, and it doesn't turn out that way. So I'd say the relational piece was a huge, huge learning and continues to be a big learning. You know, we're doing a lot of studying now about the prevalence of familial trafficking, which is parents selling their own children. And the complexity of those relationships it's really a daunting question.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, you talk about learning. Is education key to creating awareness in human trafficking?
Yeah, I think education is super important on a number of levels. To prevent victimization, educating kids about safe and unsafe people, what makes a friend, the danger of having secrets with other adults, private lives, those types of things. So there's education in the prevention realm. There's certainly specialized education in what we would call the frontline responder realm. So that's law enforcement, hospital workers, social workers, people who may intersect with victims and need to know what they're seeing. They need to be able to know the signs and be able to put those puzzle pieces together to make a better referral. And then there's certainly the work that we focus on, which is the education for the caregiver, how we need to be well equipped to understand that some behaviors and some symptoms are so related to the trauma, but they are often misdiagnosed or miscategorized. And so we have to be well-schooled in the effects of complex trauma. We have to be well-schooled in the issues of addiction, relational abuse, the spiritual damage that has been done. And so, yes, I'd say education is important, and we have a long way to go in all of those domains, prevention, intervention, and aftercare.
As someone suggested to me once before that you mentioned addiction, that addiction is a weapon that's used by folks who want to traffic children or even adults.
It can be. It certainly can be a tool of coercion. If you have somebody who is already having a substance abuse problem, it's very easy to manipulate them by withholding the substance. And so some women will say, you know, heroin was my pimp because I was so addicted to it. And the individual that was controlling the trafficking side only had to use that tool of manipulation to get her to comply. But I think we also have to look at sometimes the presentation of addictive behavior is tied to the trauma itself. You know, it's hard for any of us to fathom, but if you are going to be physically assaulted 10 times a day, it is almost a reasonable move to say that you would want to numb yourself from that experience. And so for some of our women, they will turn to alcohol or certain drugs to numb themselves from the physical trauma that they must experience on a regular basis. And that, so those are two very different ways in which addiction presents itself. It's either a pre-existing condition, if you want to put it that way, and therefore we have to deal with what was the root cause of that to begin with. We find that those women for whom the substances were part of the trafficking experience have a much easier time moving towards sobriety, because once the trauma is abated, they don't have a need to numb it. You know, if nobody's beating you anymore, if nobody's raping you anymore, you don't have to protect yourself or insulate yourself from that. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. The numbing made me think of, now this is going back, some of our listeners are too young to remember this, but Patty Hearst back in the 1970s, the newspaper owner's daughter was kidnapped. And eventually, at some point, they call it the Stockholm Syndrome, where she began to embrace the desires and needs of her captors and actually joined them. And I think perhaps that's part of it, that she became numb to her situation and embraced it.
There is that, and there is also, and the Hearst situation is a good instructional model for us, because there was constant indoctrination.
This concludes part one of our two-part interview with Jean Allert, founder and director of the Samaritan Women. January is National Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention Month. If you need to talk to someone about trafficking, call the hotline at 888-373-7888. That number again, 888-373-7888. You can also visit thesamaritanwomen.org. Please join us again next week at this time for the conclusion to this interview. The goal of public affairs programs like On the Docket is to share with listeners the knowledge that local leaders and experts bring to a topic of local interest. Is there a topic of local interest that you haven't heard but you'd like to hear addressed on the program? Just send me an email at calradiohost@gmail.com and let me know about it, and I'll give your suggestion consideration. Once again, that email address is calradiohost@gmail.com.
Thanks for joining us for this week's On the Docket. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Redeemer Broadcasting. Be sure to be listening to Redeemer Broadcasting again next week at this time to find out what's on the docket.